Hello, my fans, friends. Welcome to the Rich Herring podcast feed, powered by Acast Plus. Thanks to everyone who's come to see the Can I Have My Ball Back tour so far. It's been going really well. I've got a 4-star review in The Standard, 4-star review in The Telegraph, who once called me the worst comedy experience of the year, so that's a turnaround. People have been coming, people have really been enjoying it, and it's getting better and better. The only gigs this week are both in Pocklington, the town I was born in, near York. There's a couple of tickets left for the evening show and a few more tickets left for the matinee, I think about 4:30. But love to see you there, Yorkshire. Pop along. Check richardherring.com/ballback/tour or richardherring.com/gigs to see if I'm coming near to you. There are tickets left for nearly every show in the tour. I think Norwich has sold out. And a couple of gigs in London could do with your support as well. Anyway, please listen to the podcast. Do spread the news about the podcast to your friends. Listen as much as you can. Numbers are slightly down, which may affect the future of this podcast. So just leave it playing, even if you're not in the room. Love you. Now sit back, relax, and enjoy whatever it is you're going to listen to.
One size fits all seems like a good idea for clothes until you try them on. Same goes for healthcare. That's why United Healthcare offers flexible, budget-friendly coverage for medical, vision, dental, and more. Learn more at uh1.com.
Hey, Dave.
Yeah, Randy.
Since we founded Bombas, we've always said our socks, underwear, and T-shirts are super soft. Any new ideas?
Maybe sublimely soft.
Or disgustingly cozy.
Wait, what?
I got it. Bombas. Absurdly comfortable essentials for yourself
and for those facing homelessness,
because one purchased equals one donated.
Wow, did we just write an ad?
Yes.
Bombas, big comfort for everyone. Go to bombas.com/ACAST and use code ACAST for 20% off your first purchase.
Ladies and gentlemen, welcome to the Leicester Square Theatre. Please welcome a man who's just booked Captain Dick for a children's party. It's Richard Herring! Oh, I'm back on the right side. Oh, I know you guys weren't here last week, but it was. I had to go over there on the other side of the stage, and it was terrible. You're much, but they were awful last week's audience. So it's you're much horrible, horrible people who approved of the idea of murdering your parents. It's awful. Welcome to Richard Herring's Leicester Square Theatre podcast. But I was talking to Dave the sound man from off of Challenge Annika. He's a proper sound man, George. Not, he's good. He's good at doing it. He calls it rehearsal, but I don't know if that's going to catch on. I'm not going to say too much before we bring on our guest. I do have a book out at the moment. It's called Can I Have My Ball Back? I may mention it a couple of times. Quite a lot of people listen to this podcast, and I made what might be considered a foolish bet with the author Richard Osman that my book would sell more copies than his. I thought, this is his third one. I thought, you know, interest is going to die off in it. But if you all bought a copy of the book and maybe another 15 or 20 copies for your family, we might get there. It is for sale in America and Canada from January as well. So if you're in America and Canada, you know, just surprise. If everyone in America and Canada who listens to this podcast, that would be a drop in the ocean, unfortunately. But thank you very much for coming along. Do support us if you can. By coming to a show at some point. We're doing one in Leicester in February. We'll be back at the Leicester Square Theatre throughout January to March and May to July. I can't remember what the dates are, but nearly every Monday I'll be here just trying to find someone to interview. And there's some fantastic guests coming up. Let's crack straight on. My guest this week last appeared on this podcast in 2015, I think. I can't believe it. She is probably best known for her appearance on Kilroy, That's why we're here. She was on Kilroy. Will you please welcome the incredible Victoria Coren Mitchell? Here she is, from Kilroy. Come in, and like last time, she has brought her bag onto stage, which is what you did last time. Remember, you brought your bag on last time.
I always have my bag.
Yeah, don't, you know, you can't trust the back. You can't trust George.
I need my stuff.
Okay.
I need it near.
That's fair enough. Do you want to talk? Do you want to talk about being on Kilroy?
This chair is uncomfortable, isn't it?
Thank you.
Yes.
I was sitting on that last week. That's why it's probably uncomfortable.
Oh, I see. Yeah. Gallant to the last. On Kilroy.
Yeah.
Yes. And I was very young.
Yes.
I was on Kilroy. Do people even remember what that is? It was a sort of... Yes, it was like an English version of like the Ricky Lake show or something. There was like it was a debate. And I was on... I'd written something. I used to write for the papers, and I'd written something about... I think it was something... I made some reference to the... something about sex or something about... I can't remember what it was, but anyway, the debate was about whether you should save yourself for marriage, right? Which is... I don't know if people still do that. Some people yeah. must. It was about that. And I was there to give an opinion that this wasn't really necessary, despite the fact I'd had... If I'd had any sex, it wasn't much. But that was my... You know, just an opinion. And at the beginning of the show... Robert Kilroy Silk, and it's live, had a lady sitting next to him, and he said, this is, whatever her name was, she's 32 and still a virgin, waiting for marriage. And then gestured to me and said, this is Victoria, she has the opposite view. And obviously gave the audience the impression I was representing something that I very much wasn't. I mean, chance would be a fine thing at that age. And I genuinely remember this live... Everybody just kept referring back to Victoria's lifestyle. At one point, an old lady shouted, I'd be surprised if Victoria didn't have some sort of disease. Live on the TV. So that was... I'm glad you brought that happy memory.
I'm glad I did. Back. I was quite pleased to find that. So it's not on this. You won't find that on IMDb. You have to dig deep to find that one. What happened to Kilroy? Kilroy was... Did he say something racist and then not be allowed to be on
sort
TV?
He sort of... He went a bit...
UKIP, wasn't he?
He went a bit UKIP.
Before UKIP, it was something else, wasn't he? He was in some party. He was the head of...
I think
of,
he didn't he
did,
he start his own party of some kind.
Yeah.
And then he made a few, let's say, questionable remarks.
Okay.
And now I think he doesn't trouble the screens much.
He's still alive, though, right?
Well, as far as I know.
As far as time of recording, till someone puts a pillow over his face. It's a reference to last week's show. I'm not advising it. I am quite interested in the teenager Victoria Corrin.
Okay, well, that doesn't sound creepy.
It's all right, I was a teenager at the same time, okay. So it's allowed. Oh, we have someone to bring on some drinks for you, Victoria. Ooh. Victoria had some very... We had to send someone out for a...
I said I wanted a can of Coke. They only had Coke Zero. Thank you so much.
That's Ben Walker there, ladies and gentlemen. I'm very much indebted to him.
Have you noticed this is a thing, though? It's really hard to just get sort of full fat drinks now. Everyone's so healthy.
There we are. Let's pour your Coke.
Thank you.
We can cut this out or leave it in. Just the pouring of Coca-Cola. The choice of our generation is not probably a very good generation.
Do you know, I'm going to tell you this one thing, and I don't mean this time to talk about the porn film I made. I don't want to discuss it, but I'm going to say one thing, because I know you're interested in that. I'd made a porn film, and you'll think what people often ask me is, well, you were in that? No, I directed it. But the only cameo appearance I make is there is the sound of me opening a can of Coke behind the camera while someone gets a blowjob. That answers two questions. The two questions I'm most often asked.
Yeah.
One, are you in it? Two, was it sexy?
Yeah.
And I think that question answers both of them.
So sexy, I needed a can of Coke.
Just quietly add a... Yeah.
Well, anyway. I'm not interested in that. I'm not going to talk about that.
No, because you're cutting that bit out, so that's good.
Okay. Because, you know, obviously your dad was a very successful journalist and TV personality. And I think people probably imagine... that helped you in your career. But it's not really the... I mean, I think you got a job writing about the Magic Roundabout annual.
Oh, I see. Oh, no, yeah. I mean, he wasn't really a journalist. He was a humorist. I don't know if that's a career that exists now. But he wrote humorous prose, like kind of Perelman and Thurber. And he was sort of a TV personality, but again, not like it is now. I mean, you weren't... They didn't have celebrities in that way. It obviously did help. Not in the way people think. Because I think now, with the internet and everything, famous people, and then you see who their children are, and they put pictures of their children, and you almost they're celebrities before they've even done anything.
Yeah.
So if they then want to be on TV, they're kind of already famous. So I think people imagine that, or they imagine him sort of ringing up and saying, I think my daughter would like to be on television. It wasn't like that. But obviously it makes you realise that a life like that is possible.
Yeah, of course.
In the sense, what I wanted to be was an actress, but I wouldn't have thought that was possible. And people who are the children of actors, yeah, they just go and do that, don't they? But I would have thought, well, that's ridiculous. How would I ever get to be in anything? And the huge advantage you have if your parents have made any kind of success of the creative industry is you believe, oh, maybe I could write stories and sell them for money. That's what I wanted if it was a writer.
Yeah.
And it didn't seem like a crazy idea. As opposed to my father's experience, which is that obviously they thought, well, ideally he'll be, you know, something in trade. He'll have a skill, like, you know, plumbing or something. And when he said he wanted to be a writer, they thought he was off his head. Whereas, you know, you get that sort of sense that it might... I realize I'm giving careers advice, but that's where...
No, well, of course, you do. I mean, that happens in most jobs, that people tend to go towards whatever their parents do.
But it wasn't an active... I started weirdly early. I used to send off things to get published, but it was always in fake names and that sort of thing. So it wasn't necessarily... It wasn't a straightforward nepotistic advantage. It's just a kind of belief thing.
Yeah. But then that's quite... But you were very successful as a teenager, or at least successful enough to... You had your newspaper column in The Telegraph, which presumably led to the Kilroy... Was that the one that led to the Kilroy?
Yeah, no, I won a competition. So I used to write short stories for magazines that I sent off under false names. And I won a competition to have a column in the Daily Telegraph. So again, when you say you were successful as a teenager, I was a totally failed teenager. But I was a successful writer as a teenager.
Yeah, but you were getting paid to write, which is that's an unusual thing to happen. You got the offer of writing a novel, which you turned down.
Yes,
but
too difficult.
Yeah,
but and also the massive upside, the dizzy heights of, you know, being the studio tart on Kilroy. So that was nice.
Yeah, and other TV appearances. So you got you were talking about in one of your columns recently and about having a journal of embarrassing things, but you kept a teenage diary. You talked to Rufus Hound about that on his show, as Annika did last week. And it's interesting because you seem a very insecure teenager as most of us were.
Yes.
But then every now and again you go, I was on Wogan with whoever.
No, yeah, it's really odd. No, there was there was a particular bit in my teenage diaries. It was a very, very odd adolescence. In one way, completely normal. I think everybody as a teenager felt full of self-loathing and confusion and kind of they're physically just awkward and rubbish, and I still feel that now. But through my teenagers, but in my diaries, you'll see. But I had this column in the paper, and I was sometimes on the radio. So I particularly this section I found the other day, where I'd written, you know, this is, everything's awful, and I looked at such a boy on the bus, and he didn't look back at me, and I'm not popular, I've got no friends, and I went to Ned Sheeran's birthday party, and the only person I talked to was Frankie Howard. You know, there's no... Because as a kid, you think everything's self-evident. There's no explanation of why it would be bad to talk to only Frankie Howard. Nowadays, you know, that's who you'd want to talk to, isn't it? Somehow... I consider this yet another...
I'm surprised Frankie Howard spent all his evening talking to you. He lived quite near to us in... he lived in Wedmore when I lived in Cheddar. He certainly took a fancy to my brother-in-law and tried to chat him up in the video shop. So I'm surprised he spent the whole evening talking. Did he think you were a...
No, I didn't say he spent the whole evening talking to me. I mean, he was the only person I talked to. It might have been, can you get out of the way? I'm trying to reach the bar.
That's a bizarre existence where it's just very interesting. And as you say, you're an interesting mix of characterizations. I think characterize characters. I can't speak anymore. Mm-hmm. I should have drunk some full fat Coke. You're an interesting mix because you seem very in control and authoritative, and yet you there's this sort of softer, insecure side to you that's just come up there. You still said you still feel like you did as a teenager now, where you're a very successful performer and writer.
There's things that there's some things I'm confident about, but none of it involving dealings with other people.
Right.
That's the... Anything... No, I... There is no social encounter I can have that I don't think went wrong. None. 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 If somebody says, you know, anything at the school gates, have you had a nice holiday? They go, yes, I did, thank you. I go, why am I such a twat? Why didn't I go, how was your holiday? Or tell an interesting story. But that's normal, isn't it?
I think it is normal, but it's maybe not normal for people who then put themselves on TV to talk about things. Or at least you don't feel... I mean, it's honest to talk about it. I think maybe everyone feels it and don't talk about it. I mean, I'm the same, so I it seems like a normal reaction
also,
to
I
me.
Don't do that much on TV. It seems like I do, because Only Connect is on all the time. It's on now, for example. It's always on, but that's pretty much all I do. And mostly what that is me in a little community of other people like me in our comfort zone of quiz questions.
I mean, you know, compared to everyone else on that programme, you are the most socially adept person that's ever existed. So that's definitely... I could see why you gravitated towards that.
No. It's not like that. We we understand each other. There are people who understand that the best way of having a social occasion is sitting in a row answering a quiz. If other conversation comes up, then it does. If it doesn't, it doesn't. But if you're playing a game, a poker game, a bridge game, a quiz, you're not in the full spotlight of what interesting anecdotes do you have? Oh, none.
No. But you're ballsy in that Only Connect. You know, you'll take jokes and you'll run them over a series sometimes, and sometimes it takes a series to understand what the joke was. And that's a very ballsy way to do comedy. To, you know, it's because it's so deadpan and.
No, I know. Yes, all my jokes are private jokes. The thing about we don't have a studio audience, which is amazing. I'm just there with. Yeah. A crew who are concentrating on the job in hand and six nervous people waiting to answer the questions. So nobody's listening, seriously, nobody. Sometimes, a full 2 months after we've recorded something, I'll get a call from the channel or the executive producer saying, now listen, this incredibly filthy thing you appear to have said, and nobody heard it at the time. No one's listening. And so I remember when hosting an episode of... Have I Got News For You in lockdown, and you did it at home, you know, I had it on the Zoom in my house. And the producer said then, now you're going to find it really weird because there's no audience, so any jokes you make will be met with absolute silence. And I said, that's been the case for me for 20 years. There's no gauge. You don't... There's no laughter anyway.
Yeah. So it was an interesting choice for you to go on Taskmaster... Which was quite a revelation, I think, for people who might not have seen you, have only seen you on Only Connect.
It seemed like I'd be good at it, didn't it?
Well, that's what you think. I mean, I just assumed you could ride a bike. I would say that. I just assumed that you were capable of riding. Didn't have to learn to ride a bike on TV. when David was on, who I think you know, he said he wouldn't do it because. People that think he's clever, and doing a show like that would show that he isn't as clever as people think he is.
Did he say that about Taskmaster? David definitely has a view like... Why would they... You mean David, my husband, David?
I do mean, yes, sorry. Is there another one you know
no,
better?
No, but he's a comedian. I'm married to a comedian. And he... No, shows like sort of Mastermind. You know, they make Celebrity Mastermind and Pointless and that kind of thing. That kind of show... He, like me, wouldn't do because people would think we would know things.
Yeah.
So if we know things, people go, I thought so, smart ass. And if you don't know things, you're disappointing. So nothing to gain. A Taskmaster isn't quite like that. I don't think David would enjoy Taskmaster. I think he'd find it very uncomfortable. Possibly not for that reason.
But did you enjoy Taskmaster? I mean, it's an amazing show.
Oh, hugely. Oh, I absolutely loved it. Again, it was a slightly locked-down version. I think it would be more fun to do it in the normal way with other people there. I mean, I was quite excited to leave the house, which I did for that. But it was a little bit, you know, you couldn't do things with the other people. But no, I enjoyed it enormously. I mean, any kind of game playing I love. And also, I'm not... in a way that people find surprising, at all competitive.
No.
So when I've done things like, I've done the old charity thing, like the Bake Off, there's a charity one, or there was a BBC Two show playing games at a dinner party. And people, when you see their, what they call pieces to camera, when they're interviewed for the camera, they're always saying, oh, Victoria being incredibly competitive, she loves to win. Because they assume, because I play poker, that's how I couldn't give a toss. If there's my own money at stake, obviously it's nice not to lose. But so I don't
know. If Taskmaster had £1 million prize, like poker does, would you have tried a bit? Would you have tried harder to win it?
I'm not saying I didn't try hard to win.
Do you know what competitive means?
No, it's not that. Of course, I tried my best. I always would. But I don't mind trying my best and turning out to be slightly rubbish.
Yeah.
I didn't really mind that.
Well, but the thing with Taskmaster is you have to be rubbish. If people weren't rubbish, everyone's going to be rubbish at something because it tests a wide variety of skills, many of which you've never practiced, like balancing polos on some spaghetti. I'd never, whilst wearing mittens, I was not prepared for that as the final task. But you either do well or you don't do well. So it's but you're going to do badly.
The tasks. I didn't mind. They were really good fun. I tried really hard. I was rubbish at most of them. I'm not very physically, I can't ride a bike. I can't do any of these things. I must say I was a bit crestfallen by how badly my prize tasks went. Week after, because I thought, I really misunderstood. I thought, well, basically it's a comedy show, isn't it? So when you have to bring in your prize thing, they're going to want something funny. So I really think about what's going to be funny. And, having said that about the silence, it's different when there's other people there. So I was in a room, but it was, again, because of lockdown, there was no live audience. They played it to an audience later. So I'm just staring into the face of Greg Davis and I bring something, what's the best thing with a lot of layers? And everyone's got, layer cakes and this and that. And I've got a little plastic model of a chicken farmer because it's got... No.
Yes. No,
layers. But I'd really, yeah. And I would, but things, and other things, I really thought they were quite funny. And I brought them in, and I'd say my joke to absolute silence. And Greg would look at me silently, and the other contestants would look at me silently. That's a different level of humiliation. not being able to sort of hit a balloon with a dart from 1,000 feet is different. Here's a thing I thought was funny. It's not. That was... I struggled with that.
Yeah, as we saw what it's like doing it in front of an audience and what the reaction would have been, but similarly, our series was the first lockdown series, so it was... But I think... And then I did...
I thought yours...
No, ours was... The Champion of Champions was with an audience, so okay. I had the weird experience of doing, complete silence where you're metres away from the next contestant to suddenly being in... It's an amazing experience with an audience. It's so... So different, and the audience is all around. It feels like it's on top of you. And so, I actually couldn't say the word taskmaster at the beginning. I kind of was so intimidated, I couldn't speak. About this is going well, and I couldn't even say the name of the show because it was so weird having that audience there. But again, that lifts the atmosphere in a way. So it's very strange. But then, like you say, you're used to performing with nothing to play off, so that's okay. I won my series. So it's
we all noticed how you dropped. No, the champion we did with the audience.
I think I won that. I can't remember how I did on that. I think I did win that. Well, we'll talk about poker a little bit. I was interested to see that you played poker with Steve Martin, though you said he didn't really engage very much.
No, he didn't really. It was quite an ordinary. He sat in a baseball cap. There's no anecdote there.
Yeah.
He played in his hat and was all right.
But you have played with quite a lot of celebrities. Who's the worst celebrity you've played? I mean, in terms of being maybe the worst player and the least enjoyable person to play poker.
Oh, well, against. There's three different types of things.
Okay.
I mean, certainly Leslie Grantham, Dirty Den from EastEnders, was the worst at poker. Also, he killed a man. So, not that I can answer for his...
Not during the game, though.
Not during the game. But that doesn't mean he was the least enjoyable to play against, because that would be Eric Bristow.
Okay.
Leslie Grantham, he played a hand. I don't know how many poker players there are here, but I he came for one series of something, rather Celebrity Poker Club it was, and I was doing the commentary, and he had a hand where he had some ace bit of spades, I think he had, and it came a flush draw, and he was calling and calling. And I thought, he's not playing this hand very aggressively, you know. He had the nut flush draw. He's not playing it very aggressively, but that's okay, and can really explain, you know, why he was playing it like that. He wasn't betting nothing. And we thought, oh, well, he's playing it slow. You know, you try and commentate kind of, oh, he's playing it slow, he's trapping them. And then the last card came and it gave him a flush and he immediately folded out of turn for no bet at all. And it's really hard. He's just rubbish. I mean, I wrote about, do you remember the coughing Major Charles Ingram? I thought he probably wasn't cheating, because when he came to Celebrity Poker Club at one point, he was bluffing quite impressively, ran a really big bluff into Steve Davis. He was bluffing him and bluffing him. And on the river, he turned his cards over to reveal the bluff. And the dealer said, oh, no, there's more betting. And he said, oh, I see. Turned his cards face down and moved all in. So Steve Davis was like, oh, well, I call. So they all played, you know, quite badly.
Yeah. That does suggest that he might have had to cheat at Who Wants to Be a Millionaire, to be fair.
I just thought, if he'd have been clever enough to come up with a scam.
I don't know if he did. He should have done, you know, I think when he, the allegation is that on the first day he had pagers in pockets, and then someone outside the studio was ringing the answer in. I mean, I don't know why they just didn't put someone good in the chair. They should have got the guy. But then someone saw the guy on the phone, and but then the chess guy, who's supposedly cheating...
With anal beads.
Anal beads, that's what he should have done. That's the way to do it, isn't it? No one's going up there on Who Wants to Be a Millionaire.
There aren't any anal beads. I think the chess guy might have had an earpiece.
Right.
I don't think
earpiece? Someone would spot an earpiece.
It's not anal...
Anal beads, that's the best way. I've got anal beads in here and they're telling me which question to ask, and it's working out fantastically. I mean, I don't care what the answers are. As long as these things keep buzzing.
I don't even understand why anal beads are meant to be pleasurable. Why would that be nice?
Might be too big. We have to get Kilroy back for that one. Here's Victoria. She doesn't think anal beads are pleasurable. Whereas Richard is wearing anal beads, right? Coming up a storm. I think some people enjoy stimulation of their... I want to say pancreas, but that's not the right word. I'm trying to pretend that I'm a big expert on anal pleasure. And,
that you are or that you're not?
Well, I'm trying to pretend I am, but when I've name-checked the pancreas, rather than prostate, the perineum. No, the perineum is good, but that's on the outside. I'm going inside, madam, but, you know, you've got my vote. If you've got to work your way... I've only got
I'm torn, because on the one hand, we've got a live audience here and you're recording it. On the other hand, there's things I really want to know. Is it like a necklace, and you put it in? Is that...
It's gone above my pay grade now. Okay. I guess you've got to get it out again, haven't you? I think if you start just putting beads up there and not threaded onto anything, you're going to start losing a couple. So I think it's got to be connected to something. Also, unless they've got Bluetooth, they probably have Bluetooth now, right? It's got to be plugged into something, right, David? So it's wireless. So it's got wireless anal beads, and then, I mean, what I want to know is, because it's quite complicated, a chess move. So it would have to be like a lot of buzzers, wouldn't it? Like, this is the letter. Bah, 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 bah. This is the. It's quite a difficult thing to. The grid system is hard to work.
I absolutely reject the notion that the chess player had.
Okay.
I don't think they were doing.
There was a recent poker cheating scandal. I mean, it's quite technical, that one, isn't it? But you don't think they were cheating?
She, I think, was definitely not cheating.
Right.
I mean, I don't know, but I don't think so, because this was a hand where the situation. It's a very complicated one for kind of non-poker players to see, because she makes this call with Jack High and the chap's got 7-8. And you think, what a miraculous call. But her hand isn't really a head. It's hard to explain. Even though a jack is higher than an eight, her opponent had more cards to hit, so it's a terrible spot to get your money in.
Yeah.
And I just think there is no way. If you've got everything in place that you know your opponent's cards and you always know when you're ahead, you would never put your money in that spot. You'd wait for a nice, simple situation where he's got sixes and you've got sevens and it doesn't look like cheating.
Yeah.
I think there were some bruised male egos there. He's lost a big pot. He's up against an inexperienced player who she's probably misread her hand or misread the situation. And he's irritated and he's throwing cheating allegations around and people are quick to...
Well, and that, I mean, it happens quite a lot when you play people who don't know what they're doing, that yeah. they get flustered and they call something where you think you can't possibly call that because you've got nothing.
I know.
And they still beat you because you were bluffing.
This hand with Leslie Grantham where he's... Why on earth is he calling with ace, bit of spades if he's going to throw it away when the flush comes? It makes no sense at all.
Yeah.
That could just as easily be the other way around, where he's calling with some other inexplicable hand
yeah.
and somehow wins, and you would go, well, he must be cheating.
Yeah.
But no.
It's a stupid game, isn't it, poker?
Yeah.
Where just someone who doesn't know what they're doing can win. I mean, it never gets to that stage, does it? With was that player really that inexperienced in that hand, or was she a...
I know people who've played poker with her. She's probably not used to that level of scrutiny, and there's cameras there yeah. and lots of male egos, and she's sort of embarrassed. The thing about it is it's a long game. It's a game of long-term statistics. Any given hand you can lose, any given game, any given tournament. But the idea is if you're a skillful player, year on year you can't lose because a combination of your game selection, where you invest money... The aim of it is to lose the minimum when things are going badly and win the maximum when they're going well. And if you do that, lifetime you'll be ahead.
Yeah. And you're doing all right.
I'm doing all right.
Yeah. Do you think you're up overall over your whole career?
Are you? Yeah.
Yeah, I'm taking a bit. You know that time you won £1 million? Do you think that covered your... I think I might need a £1 million win to just get back to level after playing online for too long. Is the sexism going... I remember the worst person I played against, and I interviewed him as well on Heads Up with Rich Herring, which I don't think I ever interviewed you on that for some reason.
Hmm.
Probably because you had more class than to come on. It was a reasonable fee. John McCririck.
Ooh.
Who was, may he rest in peace, who was a slightly sexist man, but quite, I can't quite remember the tournament, but he went into the tournament, there were two female players in the tournament, it was a celebrity thing mainly, but there was a proper professional playing and somebody else who was doing very well. And I think it came down to him versus this woman. He'd said it was ridiculous women were playing, and
yes.
But then he got to a situation where the nuts was on, you know, the board had hit the nuts. It was like a flush or whatever that couldn't be beaten. It was something like that. And someone bet and he folded. He folded with the nuts was on the table. So he wasn't a good player, and he was a very nasty man. And it was, I think the women came first and second in the tournament out of 50 people with only two women playing. Which was, that was quite satisfying to witness, even though I got knocked early.
Yeah, yes, I mean, look, what it doesn't do to be petty. There was a chap called Amarillo Slim that I was a big fan of. He turned out to be a bit of a nasty character, but he was just comically sexist. I mean, you would imagine that he would be. He was a sort of 75-year-old Texan and a road gambler. But he was incredible. He would write these books saying things like, you know, a king is a king and a queen is his bedmate. He had a particular saying he used to quote a lot. A woman would have more chance of putting a wild cat in a potato sack than coming out to Texas and beating me.
Right.
And I remember thinking when he died, I've already won 3 times more money than you ever did. Good luck catching me now. but that's petty, because a lot of the time it's just... he was just an old Texan. I mean, that's how they are. That was the world he was in. And it's the other thing. But poker is, it's not a nice game. I love it, but it's not nice. It's a game of trickery and deceit and exploitation. The aim is to send other people skint. Your ideal situation, you've identified somebody vulnerable, weak, sad, maybe drunk, desperate, and the more money you can get out of them, the better. It's a horrible, horrible, genuinely, it's a horrible game. And a weird thing happened when poker went respectable, that a lot of the people in the game wanted to sell it as this rather classy thing. During all the talk about this cheating scandal, I've seen professional poker players on the internet saying things like, you know, it's not good for the game. We have to be respectable. We have to be above board. It doesn't look good to be backstabbing. What are you talking about? It's not badminton. It's a horrible game, and it's full of all sorts of, you know, cheating. And I quite like it when these sorts of scandals come up, when people are revealed to be horrible.
Yeah.
I think it reveals some of the truth of it.
Yeah.
You know, I get letters sometimes. I got one quite recently from, you know, a really nice girl, but who said, oh, we're starting a women-only poker club and we wondered if you'd come along and give us a talk because, you know, it can be intimidating for women to go into rooms, you know, with gamblers and they're all men and we just want to keep it friendly and can you give us some advice? And genuinely, my advice was play bridge. Bridge is a game that you can play with a partner. You don't need money. You can play without money and it's fine. Ultimately, how nice do you want it to be? At the end of the evening, your friends have lost money. They feel humiliated and sad. You've got it. You feel cocky and triumphant. You can never make it that nice.
So what, you know, again, you were attracted to poker and gambling as, again, from a young, very young age.
Mm.
So again, what was it as a 7-year-old? Was it that you first got interested in gambling that made you want to make that a partly your career? I mean, it's hard to pin down what your actual profession is because that's probably the thing that's made the most money.
I know. I mean, it goes beautifully at tax time. But when when I was little, I used to play cards with my grandparents and my grandfather. This is what I mean. I mean, my grandfather genuinely. If he could win all our pocket money, he could get a packet of cigarettes, and he wanted the cigarettes, and we were quite easy to defeat. So he would deal, you know, 21, which would be called blackjack in a casino. He would deal it, and he'd be the house, and we'd be the players, and we wouldn't understand there was a house advantage, and he would win and win and win, and take our pocket money and buy himself cigarettes in a quite straightforward way. But that got, you know, it got quite addictive. And I like playing card games always. And then, I don't know, I like the world of it. I like the sort of mise-en-scène. I like the fact that it was a strange kind of underground. It is again now, actually, a combination of first lockdown and then a bunch of new rules they've brought in. Nowadays, if you go into a casino, there's a lot of rules about you have to show ID and you have to show how you got the money that you're going to gamble with.
Right.
And people don't like it. So it's pushed poker back underground again. There's a lot of illegal games. Obviously, I don't attend them, but there's a lot more kind of dodgy underground gambling than there was maybe 5 years ago.
Yeah. But, you know, you were playing before it became like a trendy TV thing.
Yes.
And you were playing as a, you know, teenager largely against older men, I would imagine.
Yes. Yes.
So that's a kind of weird choice.
I like older men.
Yeah, that's fine.
No, but I mean, I genuinely do.
Yeah.
I like the idea of spending time with men. I would have been too embarrassed to kind of flirt with them. I didn't expect them to be interested in me romantically, but men were interesting. So the idea that if you played poker, you could be in a room with lots of them at the same time. I mean, it sounds really weird. I know. As I say it, I hear how it sounds. But no, I always found it's different now that I'm older. When I was younger, I found men to be quite easy company. Weirdly, it's a flip side of sexism is that young women have so many anxieties to deal with, and society makes so much contribution to the idea that we would be always worrying about what do we look like, what are we wearing, what are we saying, how are we behaving. There's quite a lot of angst in young women, whereas young men are generally mucking about and trying to make each other laugh and talking about external things and taking the piss out of each other and sort of football and the news. And I found that an attractive atmosphere.
Yeah.
And obviously they make the odd sexist remark, but not really. They just weren't really. It's like, because I tried comedy first. I did stand-up comedy for a while. Very, very similar. It was similar in the live clubs. It was just sort of a lot of men trying to make each other laugh. And they sort of vaguely make a pass at you, but basically they were interested in the comedy.
Yeah.
And gambling was the same as that.
Right.
It's different when you're older.
Yeah.
After about 35, women, I mean, with the exception of some people like yourself, Richard, women just get a lot funnier and more relaxed and men start to get preoccupied with other things and they're easier to spend time with.
Yeah.
I'm not going to say yes.
No, but I think it must be satisfying. I remember, you know, I remember like the way that poker players and men would, you know, I was sort of getting into poker when you were, you'd obviously been playing longer than I had. But I think like people were, you know, early on were disparaging of you and just thought, you know, there was a lot of sexism. It must have been incredibly satisfying to become like so successful because you, you know, you are, even if you just won one tournament and they could have gone, oh, well, that's just, that was the luck. She got a jack high and it was lucky. You've, what, you know, you've won several tournaments. You've won how many of the
European? A couple of the main events and a couple of the side events. No, I did quite well. I'm sort of retired now because I'd quit my sponsorship deal and had a child, and that's, it's harder to also play poker. But no, I did do quite well. Well, yeah.
You did very well. I mean, it must be very, that's got to be satisfying. You must have known there was that undercurrent of, you know, stupid guys, and then you just defeated them.
I mean, yes, but at the same time, I don't know. It's difficult with compliments, and I don't mean to go, oh, yes, no, I'm great. It's the important thing is to keep making people believe that you're kind of an idiot.
Yeah.
So I was very happy to keep going into tournament situations in a sort of flustered way. And if the people in international tournament poker think it was a coincidence that I won a few events, that's fine with me.
Okay. I was very good at making people think I was an idiot, but not so good at making that into a winning strategy. They saw me coming. I haven't played much. I think it's such a recently, but it's such a fascinating. It is a fascinating game and sport. Is it a sport? No
game.
It's a game, but it is a game. You know, having the patience to really understand it and really get into the mathematics of it, which you need to do. Yeah,
no, I mean it's a compelling game. Just because it's different with each person that plays it, and always the personality of the individual and the experiences they're having change the way they play the hand. I that may also be true of chess. I don't know. I don't understand the game well enough to know. Mm. But with poker, because so many dynamics come into play in terms of who wants to have the upper hand, and it's a human drama all the time.
It is, and when you get it, you know, I've had nights where I've realised where I am in the table and I've realised I can win and have won. That's very satisfying.
It's great. And I can imagine when great tennis players, of which I am not one, they talk about when you're on your game, it's like the ball is travelling very, very slowly. And so even though to us it looks like this incredibly fast serve, and then to, you know, whoever, Goran Ivanisevic, it's like the ball's travelling very, very slowly. He's got all the time in the world to get into position for it. So it's like that sometimes with poker. It all goes very quiet and you think, I can hear what you're thinking. There's nothing you can do. I can feel when you're confident, when you're nervous, when you're pretending. I can just tap into it. And it's great.
Yeah. Good.
Life is full of what-ifs. Some awesome. Like, what if AI could fold your laundry? And some, well, less awesome. Like, what if you have unexpected medical costs? UnitedHealthcare can help get you covered with Health Protector Guard fixed indemnity insurance plans. They supplement your primary plan to help you manage out-of-pocket costs. No deductibles, no enrollment periods, and especially no more what-ifs. Visit uh1.com to find the Health Protector Guard plan for you.
Wow!
Nice!
Yeah!
What you're hearing are the sounds of people everywhere putting on Bombas socks, underwear, and T-shirts made from absurdly soft materials that feel like plush clouds. Yeah, that plush. And the best part? For every item you purchase, Bombas donates another to someone facing homelessness.
Bombas. Big comfort for everyone. Go to bombas.com/ACAST and use code ACAST for 20% off your first purchase. That's bombas.com/ACAST. Code ACAST.
Millions of people have lost weight with personalized plans from Noom. Like Evan, who can't stand salads and still lost 50 pounds.
Salads generally for most people are the easy button, right? For me, that wasn't an option. I never really was a salad guy. That's just not who I am. But Noom worked for me.
Get your personalized plan today at Noom.com. Real Noom user compensated to provide their story. In 4 weeks, the typical Noom user can expect to lose 1 to 2 pounds per week. Individual results may vary.
I'm going to ask you an emergency question. We'll get off poker. because I could talk to you about it all night. And, you know, some people might not be interested, idiots. Do you think your obituary photo has already been taken, Victoria?
Well, it depends. Where's the obituary being published?
Good question.
It's amazing. If you type my name into the images bit of Google, in 90% of the pictures, I'm quite heavily pregnant.
Right.
So they all date from sort of probably about three occasions when I left the house or did a TV show when I was pregnant. But there's something, and again, one can get paranoid. I don't know if it's a sexist thing, but it's from a long time ago. I think there's certain outlets that really take pleasure in women looking not their best. Well, obviously, it looks lovely to be pregnant, but if people don't know you're pregnant, and then you're all kind of weird. Yeah. It's not how you normally look.
Yeah.
So, and they're very unfair, and they come up so often. In fact, I think I even wrote to you about some ancient picture. Where did you find that one? There was a picture that was taken. This was an interesting thing. After my daughter was born, we would occasionally get papped. You know, people would take pictures, and you don't know they're there. And times when we'd be taking her for a walk in the pram, you wouldn't see anybody, and then this picture would appear, and invariably, David would be looking like this magnificent father. And there was one where we'd gone to a cafe, and I think I'd briefly handed her over to him while I quickly ate some spaghetti. And I was forking in this bit. The caption was something like, "David Mitchell, the caring, hands-on father." As Victoria enjoys another meal. There was one particularly, I thought, interesting caption where we were walking along the road, and I how it is, like about a week after you'd had a, I was an absolute wreck. I was in some dress that I'd picked up off the floor, you know, something, I was sick on the shoulder, and my hair wasn't washed. My hand was in a sort of bandage thing, because not to, you know, revolt you, but I had a sort of RSI. Because when you're breastfeeding, you sort of hold a baby in a position you're not quite used to. You sort of hold it on there. Your hand is... Anyway, I won't go into detail. But so I had this sort of RSI. Imagine, I've got a bandaged hand, unwashed hair, in this dress, and these sort of red shoes that have been near the door. Awful. I'm wheeling the pram. No idea there's anyone there. There's this picture. Certainly the most unflattering picture you've ever seen. The caption was... David Mitchell... Every inch the relaxed and casual father in navy blue, while Victoria puts on a summery display in red and green. And I'm not putting on any kind of a display. I've just left my house and someone's taken a picture from behind a hedge. But in using the words puts on a display, just subtly put the idea in the minds of the reader that I've sort of come out going, get this. So, yes, I assume one of these terrible, unflattering pictures.
I would love it if that was your obituary photo. I just now hope I outlive you, which is not very likely, and I can somehow make that happen.
Yeah. There's some awful pictures. I think I don't really care enough what I look like.
Yeah.
I care a bit, but not really. I mean, as I said, it was a bit earlier today. Well, no, you do. This isn't just audio now, is it? You sort of film it. Maybe I should go to the hairdresser. Oh, I'm not immortal. I'll just brush it. And it's like with Only Connect, people write every week, where did you get that? I don't know where I got that. I just put it on. And you think, okay, look, you've got to look sort of vaguely clean and presentable. But the amount of time you're supposed to invest in planning your wardrobe and doing your hair and makeup for public appearances, I can't bring myself to care enough. So there's a lot of bad pictures.
But that's, you know, this is one of the kind of hidden prejudices in society, you know, that has come up a couple of times, actually, of just, as a man, you don't have to spend any time, you know, you can, and there are some very well-groomed and handsome men, but as a man, you don't have to spend any time thinking about what you're wearing or putting on makeup or even brushing your hair. I mean, I look at sight in some of these... Just look at the photos. So, but as a woman, you've got to, you know, at least think about that. That's at least part of it. That's where people who say, "Oh, society is now equal," it's that kind of thing where they're not even thinking about that.
No.
But okay. If you could go into a chrysalis, I don't want to ask you. I'm going to ask you if you could go into a chrysalis, dissolve, and come out as something completely different, like a caterpillar turns into a butterfly, or something the same. What would you come out of your chrysalis as if you get to choose what you turn into?
What, a sort of a different entity?
It could be anything. That's why I'm going to leave it up to you.
Something without consciousness.
Right, wow.
Which sounds bleak. But
it does. That's just death, you know. That is dying. That's just dying. You go into a chrysalis, it's called a coffin, and you slowly melt, and then you have no consciousness.
Oh, yeah, but don't forget, I'm not an atheist, so I don't think that.
Okay.
So, aha, I've got you there. And you'll be thinking, no, I've got you there. But think one more move, no, I've got you there. But self-awareness is tortuous, partly in that awkward social way that we're talking about, but also, obviously, if you think about, you know, the finite existence in this life is harrowing, and if you really understood it, you'd be constantly screaming. So I think to be something like a tree would be quite calming.
Yeah.
Is that a jolly answer?
No, that's good. It's a very nice answer. I was trying to think, it might have been you. I've been reading so many books because I'm doing like 5 interviews in this coming week. In fact, there's 2 today. I'm sorry, 1 last week. One on Sunday. I'm interviewing Richard Osborne about his book, and I can't remember where this is, but something about, is there a squid that lives for 15,000 years? Was that something you said?
No, it wasn't.
Annika Rice said it, I think.
It wasn't me.
Squids, like, so there's some sea creature that lives for, like, a what? A jelly, might be a jellyfish. I mean, they've got no...
Squid do live a long time.
You know about perineums and jellyfish. And I like... See me after the show. Would you like to be a jellyfish that lived for 15,000 years but had no real consciousness? Would that appeal to you?
Yeah, but I mean, it doesn't really matter whether it's 15,000 years or...
Doesn't if you're a jellyfish. Or it's fucking 5 shit years. All the time.
It's infinite or it's finite. That's the difference.
Yeah, it's not infinite though, is it?
Well, I don't know how it would seem to the jellyfish.
Yeah.
We get.
But even if you die and go to heaven, like you believe, it's not going to be infinite. You know,
I feel it'll be possible for you to simplify that more. I don't know.
You're going to get bored after like 100,000 years floating around.
Well, maybe it's a different sort of consciousness. Now is not the time for that debate.
Yeah, but I
have to assume it wouldn't be like being a 15,000-year-old jellyfish.
Okay. Interesting. Interesting. So I think that's my best question, that chrysalis one. Because it's, you know, there's so many ways you can answer it, and you'd be a tree.
What's the best answer you've had?
I don't know, they're all good, because they all reveal something, because it's such a weird question, and it's such a, you know, if I could be bothered to be a therapist about it, I can't. I'm just going for the easy laugh. But I think it says more about the guest than any other question. So someone should go through that as their university thesis. Let me do a few more.
Ironic that it said something that sounded terribly depressed, because actually, at the moment, you know, I'm superstitious to say, but everything's quite nice at the moment. I've had various bleak times. Now everything's quite good. I just don't want this bit to stop. Which is why I think if you were a tree, you wouldn't know that it was going to. And that's why that's appealing.
Yeah. Then someone could cut you down with an axe. I mean, that could happen to you as a human being as well. I don't reckon it hurts as much for trees. Do you reckon hurt trees feel pain when they're chopped down?
No.
Okay. All right, I'll try and move away from... I definitely haven't asked you this question because I last touched you in 2015. If all the art galleries and museums in the world got together and said, we love Victoria and we want to give her something to say how much we appreciate her, and they said you can take one thing out of all the art galleries and museums in the world, what one thing would you like to possess?
Probably the gift shop, because I love an art gallery gift shop.
Yeah.
Do you know what I mean? Like it's all like bookmarks and pencil sharpeners and things you'd never really use, but they're great. Although, if you mean an artwork, which you probably do, a weird thing happened to me this summer.
Okay.
I saw the statue of David, Michelangelo's David, in a gallery in Florence, and I cried.
Wow.
And I don't identify as the sort of person who cries in an art gallery. I'm the sort of person who stands in an art gallery thinking, how long are you meant to stand in front of the thing? When do you move on? I don't want to look like an idiot.
Yeah.
You know, I wouldn't be properly kind of... But I really was. It's kind of amazing. And I was actually moved to tears. But that doesn't mean I necessarily want it in my house.
No.
Because there wouldn't be room for anything else. But it's It's good. It's worth going to see.
Okay.
I mean, I'm sure people have said that more poetically.
No, I'm not at all. I'm just thinking of cock jokes that I'm not going to do. I'm not going to do them. I'm not going to do any of them. I thought loads because it was a beautiful moment. I saw La Pietà in which is in the Vatican somewhere, in it, one of that big church in the Vatican, St. Peter's. And that I thought that was pretty good. Though it's the proportions are wrong, but it did that move as an 18-year-old. That moved me. That's pretty impressive. But yeah, other than that, pretty much all art I don't get. But you see, again, I would think you would be the last person to say get the gift shop, and
but I don't know very much about art. It's at the moment I'm oddly writing an essay about Grayson Perry for a catalogue of a retrospective exhibition that he's having, like a big exhibition that he's having at the National Galleries of Scotland. And they asked me to do it, and I sort of said, I don't know anything about art. I seem like the kind of... I mean, I'm a fan of Grayson Perry, but I seem like someone who would know, and I'm not. And they are claiming, no, that's what we want. We want somebody who's non-art world. But I don't think they mean it, and I'm going to send this essay in, and then they'll see. I don't know about art.
Right. I mean, you are very smart, and you are very clever. So it is fair that people assume that of you. Being clever doesn't mean you can ride a bike. That's the, you know, it doesn't follow. So in fact, often being clever means you can't ride a bike because you've done others. Why didn't you learn to ride a bike when you were a child?
Because I grew up in central London.
Yeah, but there's bikes here.
I don't know. My parents would be. It wasn't the kind of thing we did. I said to my daughter the other day, actually, said, you're very lucky because I like doing the kinds of things that children like. My parents weren't like that. I love, you know, a fun fair, a Disney film. I always want to do that kind of thing, more than her most of the time. I'm kind of waking her up and going, ooh, let's go to the zoo. That kind of thing. But my parents weren't really...
Right.
They were real grown-ups.
Yeah.
You know, they like to sort of go out for dinner and look in the windows of estate agents. And we kind of stood there.
Do you think that's generational? I think that might be generational.
Be generational.
I think, my parents we did some fun things, but
We didn't have to do anything
I think it was worse for them, you know. I think they look back and they regret it. Like, I remember my sister was, like, her kids who were all grown up now, but it was more like they were sort nearly... more like friends than like, you know, you're the authority figure. But for my parents, it was like they had to keep everything in order and tell us off.
And they were sort of busy, weren't they? They were doing stuff. Any of those things, I can't roller skate, ice skate. I can't do lots of those things.
I mean, I watched so much TV.
Yeah, a lot of TV.
Like all the time. And I can't, you know, they were, and my parents were kind of very academically minded. And I can't believe I wouldn't let my kids watch as much TV as I watched. It was insane.
You know what, though? It's two different sorts of things you're identifying there. I can't ride a bike or do those sorts of things. Not knowing about art is a different thing.
Yeah.
So it's interesting that you say, oh, but you're clever can mean different things. What I'm good at is appearing to be something. That's why I was quite good at poker. I can pass myself off as things.
Yeah.
That works on OnlyConnect as well. I can look like I might be the kind of person that knows about things, but I'm not. And even though I'm saying I'm not, you're thinking you are really. I'm not. It makes my husband very happy because even he, in his heart of hearts, sometimes secretly, he suspects that I'm cleverer than he is. And I'm not, but he thinks that I am. So I will sometimes say things to him like, if you're looking at a map, is left and right the same if the map is upside down? And he realises I'm a real moron. And he finds it very reassuring.
Can you see things in your mind's eye? If you close your eyes, can you visualise stuff?
Yes.
Okay.
I'm not a psychopath.
I can't visualise stuff. It's
really?
Yeah, it's called aphantasia. It's nothing. It's not.
It's a sign of sociopathy. Wow. Do you think other people exist?
Yes, I do. But you know, maybe not. you can't be sure. But yeah, I do. I don't think not being able to see things in your mind is annoying. I didn't know. I didn't realise it until 2 years ago. Now I'm very annoyed.
So what do you mean? You close your eyes and think of a rabbit and you don't see a rabbit?
Yeah.
What do you see?
I'll tell you. Nothing. Sometimes, if I think of my wife or my kids, I have like a brief flash. I know what they look like, but it's kind of behind my It's back there rather than there. So I'll have it like it's like a it's like seeing a reflection on a pond go like that and disappear straight away. So I can sort of almost bring things to mind. If I'm falling asleep, I can sometimes see things, but not of my choice. So I can dream. I see things in my dreams.
Okay, hold on. You see things in your mind, but not of your choice.
If I'm dreaming, so like I can't control what I'm dreaming, and when I'm drifting off to sleep, images will start coming into my mind then, but that's the only time. But not of my choice.
But if you close your eyes and I say, think of a rabbit,
yeah.
You can't think of a rabbit, but you don't think of something else.
I think the word rabbit, or I have an idea of what a rabbit is without being able to see a picture of it.
Does that apply to anyone else in this room?
Yeah, definitely. It's about 2 in 100 people.
I find that creepy.
I've only got one testicle as well. Are you going to have a go? Is that a sociopathic thing?
That's much more normal.
Okay. It's average. So, look, I love doing heresy, which I've done a couple of times. I mean, it's a series that kind of seems to come back every... It's like Halley's Comet or something. It comes around.
Every like 4 years or something.
So like the Olympics of radio shows. What I like, I think it's a great show because it's fun to be able to discuss, controversial things within the veil of we're meant to be being controversial. But what I also like about it, which is very old school, is that after the show is over, you take everyone out for dinner.
Yeah.
Which is the sort of thing that someone like Ned Sheeran would do after Loose Ends when you went to his party. But you pay for it, I think, as well.
Yeah, I do. And this is Radio 4 money, so I make a loss on the series.
Yeah, absolutely.
I'm in it for the dinner.
Yeah, the dinner's good.
Yeah, that's the dream, isn't it? I mean, that's the dream is you make a show for Radio 4 and go for dinner.
Yeah.
Everything else is just...
Have you ever thought about making the dinner the show? Do the show, don't put the show out. Throw the show away, go for dinner and record that.
I thought you said you liked the show.
I'm just saying, have you ever thought of it? I know, it's a really old school thing to do.
It is an old school thing, but doing radio is an old school thing. I find it slightly intimidating how many people have podcasts now. And I, as a rule now, don't go on people's podcasts. I make an exception for this one, and that is because... I believe, and this is not fun, it's a serious point. I believe this podcast is your proper creative vision. You were sort of the first person to do it, and you had a vision of it, and this is it, and so it's a kind of perfect art form. There are millions of people that have podcasts now that I think they or their agent just thought, people have got a podcast, I'd better have a podcast. And they say, come on it, and it's never any much. It's like people that you know or you've met or they're sort of friends... genuinely 3 or 4 times a week get in touch and go, you come and do this podcast. We can't pay you, but do come and do it. And I just think, I know it's a generational gap, but what I wanted was to be on Radio 4. And understand maybe people don't listen to that much now and maybe they listen to different mediums and maybe a podcast is the way, but and I don't want to have a pod. I don't want to be a business person. I don't want my own YouTube channel. I don't want any of it. I want to be having dinner after a Radio 4 recording. And I'll die on that hill.
Yeah.
And, I mean, you must feel that. Because it's one thing to have this... I mean, I don't know how, at the point when you started this podcast, you figured out this was going to be something people were going to do. But that's the moment to be doing it.
Yeah, well, I didn't know what it would be. I just knew I liked... doing it. I like the creative freedom of it and not having to bother with people telling you could do it or not. So that was the, you know, the ability to say whatever you wanted was interesting. But then it was interesting, the early podcasts we did, we'd sort of push back the boundaries of comedy and be as rude as we could be. And then you kind of get, when you're allowed to do it, it's not as much fun.
Also even there, because... freedom can be a bad thing. Again, I would make an exception for this podcast, which is it's a different thing. It's quite unique in that way. In general, a lot of them are, is what happens when performers don't have people telling them to stop.
Yeah.
Well, I tell you what, we'll just put out all 2 hours of it. It would be better if it was, you know, a quarter of the length.
Yeah.
When things aren't edited, they go on and on.
Yeah, that's what we do.
But, yeah, so I am now effectively... subsidising and okay, even then they only want it every 4 years. Everybody's doing it almost for charity. The money's very small, yeah. And people turn up and do it for love of BBC Radio 4, which all performers feel, I think. And then I spend any money I get from it on having dinner afterwards and subsidise that with gambling.
Yeah. That's true. I don't feel so bad now, think about it that way. But it is nice. But, yeah, I mean, but I think all these, do you think, I sort of feel... I like it because it's old school, but like radio's. I think TV's going to die out, and I think TV people haven't really appreciated that, as we understand it. TV is not something people younger than us are interested in. TV should be much more geared towards people who are 50 and over, because that's the only people who like. Still tune into it the way.
Yeah, but the people that are young now won't always be. I'm not sure you're right. I think everything's cyclical, and I think there is a now growing appetite for the communal activity. I think everyone's splintered off in their little group watching a niche thing by themselves will become dull, and the idea that we're all watching something at the same time together is going to be in the ascendant. I mean, whether it's in our lifetime, I don't know, but there will be a moment, you know, when... You know how people stopped using the phone because everyone was sending emails? Yeah. And they were all excited because email was the new thing. And then you stop for a moment and think, imagine if there was something like email, only you didn't have to do any typing and you didn't have to wait. You just press one button and it makes a noise in the person's house and they hold a thing and you can just talk to them. Amazing. And you have this moment where you look back and realise the old thing is the best thing. And I think that the loneliness of self-programming will die off and people will return to TV in huge numbers.
OK, good luck with that. You should get a podcast. Do a podcast. Just come up with something. I think, you know, you're definitely right. It's definitely a medium where... Because it's locked, you know, lockdown happened and, you, as you say, you still managed to broadcast... But there was a thing in one of your recent columns, which I think is bang on. It's like people have forgotten about going to the cinema, right? And so like people don't go to the cinema, and you notice it if you go. We used to go to the cinema at least once a month, and I think we're about to go this week for the first time in probably almost a year.
Yeah, it's great.
Even with the kids,
you just forget, and then you walk past one and go, "Oh, no, that's a thing. What's on at the cinema?" But it's really great. I mean, I hope that they don't all close down because it's a...
They are all closing down. I think it should come back, it's interesting even within theatre. Some things are flourishing still, but I think this, for example, was like before lockdown, we were basically... Whoever was on, we would more or less sell half or more of the tickets, and now it's a big struggle to get people to come out because, you know, they've just thought, I'll stay at home, listen to it at home.
Do you think we're sounding like a pair of 15,000-year-old squid?
Yeah. But I think it's interesting how something like that can change the landscape. So it could, you know, I don't think film is going to stop. I don't think cinema is going to stop. People will carry making films, but maybe they won't. People won't go to a big room with some overpriced popcorn to eat it.
But can you imagine for how long people have said theatre is dead? You know, when film was first invented, everyone in theatre was saying this medium cannot survive. Even Shakespeare, you know, in Henry V...
He said about cinema.
Almost.
OK.
Almost. Shakespeare writes about a sort of apology for the fact that he's about to attempt to present the Battle of Agincourt with a cast of about six, and I think he calls something like some rusty swords and wooden O, meaning a little theatre and some cheap props. I can't do it. And he almost anticipates one day there will be a way of presenting the Battle of Agincourt realistically. And if you see Kenneth Branagh's Henry V, it's that.
Right.
There's a film version. You go, wow, that just is the Battle of Agincourt. But people still go to the theatre. Mm-hmm. So that's a note of hope for you.
We'll see. Don't go to music hall anymore, do they? What happened to music hall?
Well, that's true.
Yeah. Things come, things go. That's what I say to you. you've done, Have I Got News For You, 25 times.
Have I?
Yeah. I think you and I did, your first appearance was my first appearance on Have I Got News For You. Might be wrong. I've done it 2 times. That year and then the next year, and then that stopped. So you basically do every series of, you've basically been in every series of Have I Got News For You since you were on Have I Got News For You in 2010.
I think I've done the last few.
Yeah.
Yes.
It's good. You say, because you got into hosting it, right? So do you always host it, or do you sometimes on the panel still?
I haven't been a panelist for a long time. I mean, hosting it, obviously, I much prefer, because you know what the stories are going to be, so you know what the answers are, and they write jokes for you. Yeah. So that's a bit of a no-brainer. It's very good fun to host. And they let me do it because I'm quite good at sight reading. So I can read out the jokes off the order queue and they don't have to do lots of retakes.
Right.
So this is my only skill.
It's amazing that show is. Do you think it's ever going to end? Because they all get to a point and Mock the Week's going now and Buzzcocks went and has come back again. But I know that host now changes. It would be interesting to know whether, A, it would have survived if that hadn't happened, and B, if Angus Deaton would still be doing it this time later if all that hadn't happened.
I don't know. I mean, I'm a fan of the show. So as a viewer, I'm a fan of it. I hope it doesn't end. I just hosted it last week, and I just thought they were being so funny. I mean, it was a frightening week, and, just all sorts of, you think, maybe it's the end of the world. And you tune into that show and you go, wow, they're still making comedy out of it. I sometimes forget that I'm hosting. I'm sitting in the middle and Paul has gone off on a tangent about something. I'm just laughing at it. And it's so kind of comforting, but at the same time challenging. So I hope it doesn't. I mean, TV people particularly can be in the business of going, oh, let's just get rid of it and have a new thing. And sometimes you don't need that.
But I don't think they're going to. It doesn't happen. I think it would have happened if it was going to. I mean, it would have happened.
Yeah, I hope it doesn't.
I think, ironically, I think the host change is what keeps it alive, right?
Yeah, that keeps it, quite fresh, because you can always wait and see.
Yeah. So well done for, maybe, do you think when it comes to the end of Have I Got News For You, you'll have done it more times than I will, or do you think I might catch up?
I think you might catch up, because I'm more likely to say something really awful and get cancelled.
I don't think you are. I think if I do 25 of I Got News For You, I'll be cancelled before too long. Have a word with them, Victoria, and tell them I haven't been on for 11 years. I had a wonderful little 2010. It was when I had a Hitler moustache. Maybe I should go back to that Hitler moustache.
Yeah, maybe.
I think it would really fit in with the zeitgeist now. I was 10 years ahead. That was the problem.
If you could be openly right-wing, it would be good, because there's a real shortage. Honestly, in topical comedy...
I'll do that.
There's a real shortage of right-wingers. If you could be, don't snow good, not ironically.
No,
you have to mean it.
I fancy the most evil Tories. They're my
already
sexual fantasies.
Already the word evil has given you away.
But it's a good thing. In sexiness terms, you can't be sexy if you're not a little bit evil.
Do you know, I used to think that, and then I married someone who's not evil at all. It's not the way I thought I'd go.
Yeah.
But there it is.
My wife's barely evil, but, you know, she has got enough evil in there to keep it interesting. I love you, darling. I'm sorry about this man on this podcast. He's so horrible. Well, look, I don't want to keep you for too much longer, but I'm going to.
It's good. There's no rush. My husband's in a play up the road.
Yeah.
And he wants to go drinking afterwards, so I can't turn up to collect him too early.
How's it going? I've seen good reviews of his...
It's great.
Yeah.
It's great. Listen, don't put this bit in your podcast, because that looks weird. I'm just bugging you. If you haven't seen Upstart Crow, it's really good. I mean, West End theatre tickets are very expensive, but I would say in this case it's worth it.
Is it as good as Mary Poppins, which I saw yesterday? Does he, spoiler alert for Mary Poppins, does David Mitchell fly into the audience at the end and with an umbrella and actually get into the... She flies. It's the only good bit. I didn't really enjoy Mary Poppins. But if she fly, there's a bit where the man, the chimney sweep man, Bert, like, it's a big proscenium march. He walks up the wall, walks across the ceiling and walks down. And all I could think is that one day that's going to break that thing, isn't it? Someone's going to see that guy fall.
It's that Mary Poppins show is absolutely, it's wonderful. So it's an unfair question you ask. Okay. Obviously, yes, the show my husband is in is better than anything. But the Mary Poppins is very, very good. If you're looking for a magnificent children's show with songs and people...
Don't you think... It's arrogant of them in that Mary Poppins show to change some of the songs and put in their own songs. I think they're arrogant.
But they don't change them, but do they?
They've changed a load of the fucking songs.
No, they haven't.
And they've added a load of their own shit songs in it that aren't as good.
Is this?
And they've taken out some of the good songs.
No.
They have. They
do
don't
you fall asleep during it?
They don't do low. They don't do like, they don't do the, any of the bank ones. They don't do. There's a pretty major. They don't do the. And I love to laugh. I can understand them taking that bit out. They tried to going back to the books.
Well, the books are wonderful.
And weird.
Yeah, no, but the books are. Actually, I've made a documentary about them. Okay. The books are really great. I didn't like the Mary Poppins sequel film. That I thought was, arrogant to try and do that.
Arrogant.
Yes.
Yeah, I think they're arrogant to add a bit to supercalifragilisticexpialidocious. They spell out supercalifragilisticexpialidocious. I can't even say it. So that's how bad.
Have they gone back to the original songs and put more of them in?
There's some of the original songs from the original film, but they go and fuck around with them. And the Sherman Brothers were very good.
I think they might all be original Sherman Brothers stuff from the stage show, and the changes were made at the point of the film.
Well, then that's all right, then. Then I have no complaints. Apart from it being a bit childish and scary. But tell David he should do a bit where he flies. Tell him just a new end. He's got to get an umbrella and fly up right to the top of the theatre. And then he's got to rush down for the curtain call. That's the best bit.
Yeah.
So he flies up and then suddenly he's in the curtain call.
I'll pass that on. He does a dance.
Petula Clark's in it. I didn't know. In Mary Poppins. I didn't know. I couldn't understand why everyone thought the bird lady was so good. Got a mass around the pause. Oh, wasn't that good? Then I found out it was Petula Clark, and she was good.
Yes, she's very good.
She wasn't the best thing in it, though, was she? She just comes on and sings about tuppence.
Yeah, Petula, because she's 100 years old, and she does come on and sing, and that's impressive.
No, she's good. I'm saying she's good. Stop trying to say she's no good.
Well, you brought this up by saying, is my husband's show as good as Mary Poppins, which I saw yesterday, and everything you've said about it is negative. Is it as good as Mary Poppins with its awful modern songs and its disappointing Petula Clark and the bit with...
Yeah, it's as good as that. That's what I think it is. I think it's worse than that. That's what I'm saying. He's a wonderful man. Is it still going all right between you two?
Yes, we're very happy.
Yeah, it's going
you.
All right.
Yes.
God, imagine if I got you there. That could have been in the Daily.
I could have been in
the Daily Mail with a tiny credit at the bottom saying Richard Herring's podcast. There was some doubt on Victoria's face as she insisted everything. Victoria Corrin insists her marriage is going well.
It's fine.
It's going fine. What can we expect? There's more. Is Only Connect going to go on forever as well?
Yes, but these are very serious questions. I thought this show was all about if you were a mouse, would you rather have sex with a walnut or an orange? But now you're...
Answer the question. Answer your own question. It can be... No, you know, it can be the beauty of this show. I don't know what he said. I love the fact he said I had a vision. I don't even fucking know what's going on now. It changes every time we do it. It just depends on the mood in the air. There's a mood of craziness in the air. And the last 3 days, you don't know here. You weren't here last week. I've been driving into London and people are just driving their car, trying to drive the car into you, trying to run into the road. London's gone insane. Something's going to go down in London. You see if I'm... People who are listening to this podcast know that I'm right. That's the people in the audience have no idea. The people at home... The mutilated mutants. He was right. He was right about London. I've been going on for a long time. I go a bit crazy by this time. That's why I was trying to wrap it up. We've done loads. More Only Connect. More Heresy. Going to do more Heresy before? No?
Maybe, yes. Okay. Maybe in a couple of years. Only Connect, definitely.
Yeah. Mm. More poker. So you've been playing a bit of poker, haven't you?
Yeah.
Yeah.
A little bit.
Okay.
I mean, it's, you know, it is trickier. It is trickier when you want to be at home, but yeah, a bit more.
Okay. New husband?
No, I think either.
Going to stick?
I think I'll stick with you, yeah.
Okay. All right. I've got nothing else for you. I was hoping. You're a big sex symbol, Victoria. For everything that you, for all your for all your talk of, you know, I'm not that great and I worry about this and all your teenage diaries worrying about it, to be, you know, approaching your middle years.
I don't think I'm a big sex symbol.
You are a big sex symbol.
I don't think so.
Okay. Well, I'm just telling you are, so deal with it. So congratulations on that.
I know. I think I'm unusual as a woman of being on TV is that I seem attainable. I don't think
that's true at all.
I don't think anybody thinks she's out of my league.
I think they do.
I think that's all that is.
No, I disagree. But
well, that's very kind.
Thank you. I better stop. I think I better stop this now. It's always lovely to see you. Come on again in another 8 years.
I'd be very happy.
Okay, brilliant. You can come on earlier if you like. Ladies and gentlemen, please give it up for the amazing Victoria Corin Mitchell. Thank you very much. You have been listening to Rahulastapa with me, Richard Herring, and my guest, Victoria Corin Mitchell. Thank you to Scant Regard. That's the music. That's the band. They play it on instruments. I'm indebted to my producer, Ben Walker. Thank you very much to Chris Evans, not that one, and all of the GoFasterStripe.com team and the Sky Potato team. Thank you very much to everyone at the Leicester Square Theatre who look after us so nicely. Head to leicestersquaretheatre.com to find out when our next gigs are. We're here nearly all the time, pretty much any Monday you choose. Come on down and see. This is Sky Potato Fuzz and GoFasterStripe.com production. Please tell your friends about this podcast. Even if you don't have any friends, just shout about it at the bus stop until somebody listens. Thank you very much. Goodbye.
Hey, it's Danny Pellegrino from Everything Iconic. Ready to upgrade your style game without blowing your budget? Check out Quince. They've got all the good stuff, shirts and polos, activewear and fine leather goods, all at 50 to 80% less than other high-end brands. And the best part? They're all about safe, ethical and responsible manufacturing. Get that luxury vibe without the luxury price tag. Hit up quince.com/upgrade for free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. That's quince.com/upgrade.
Even when we're on a budget, we still deserve nice things. Quince is a place to scoop up stunning high-end goods for 50 to 80% less than similar brands. They have buttery soft cashmere sweaters starting at $50, luxurious Italian leather bags, and so much more. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Get the high-end goods you'll love without the high price tag with Quince. Go to quince.com/style for free shipping and 365-day returns.
Imagine the softest sheets you've ever felt. Now imagine them getting even softer over time. That's what you'll feel with Boll & Branch's organic cotton sheets. In a recent customer survey, 96% replied that Boll & Branch sheets get softer with every wash. Start getting your best night's sleep in these sheets that get softer and softer for years to come. Try their sheets with a 30-night guarantee. Plus, get 15% off your first order at bollandbranch.com. Code BUTTERY. Exclusions apply. See site for details.
Thanks for listening. RichardHerring.com/gigs. GoFasterStripe.com for all my books, downloads, all that sort of shizzle. Oh, yeah, I know all the cool words. And would love to see you on the Can I Have My Ball Back tour if you can make it. Bye.